This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Dave Grosby joining us at the bottom of the hour, getting ready for football, another good weekend of football. Of course, no Seahawks to go, but let's go to Sean in Riverside, California. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing pretty good. Thank you very much for asking. And just so you know, guys, on Odyssey Radio broadcast in Seattle, and I'm sorry, Seattle fans, but as a Rams fan, I suggest myself, we beat the living crap out of the Seahawks, and I'm so proud of that. And I just want to get that out of my chest.
Oh,
anyways,
okay.
But that was last week. This is this week. I know we're playing against the Packers, and I know we're going to play in Lambeau Field.
That's correct. It's so, been 24-degree wind chill.
The question is, how affected do you think will be Goff's thumb injury during the cold weather?
I think it's going to be tough.
Jared Goff are like one win and two loss in the cold weather inside the Lambeau Field.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that Jalen Ramsey and Devontae Adams, it's going to be one hell of a good matchup, and I do mean one hell of a good matchup between those two.
Yeah.
Like if I was a better man, I don't know who I'm going to bet on between those two, who's going to have a better result when it comes to that important game.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it is going to be fascinating to see because, again, these are, you know, two teams that, that do well. And, you know, the big concern I have is going to be the quarterback situation because you got Aaron Rodgers with 48 touchdown passes, and then you've got a quarterback that's playing with a broken thumb.
That is so true.
That's not going to be
so
easy.
So true. So my question is to you is that do you think that how much of the chance do you think that the Rams will pull off a huge upset against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers?
I'd give it maybe 25% because again their defense is so good and you know it really comes down to Cam Akers. Because if he can run the ball, Packers aren't good at stopping the run. And if that's going to be the case, well, then they can do some positive things. The question I wonder about, with that thumb injury, even if they run the ball well, can the Rams get touchdowns? Because if they settle for field goals, they're not going to beat Aaron Rodgers.
That is true. Don't get me wrong. Aaron Rodgers is definitely a future Hall of Famer, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yep.
He is a brilliant. He's a smart man. And I should mention, like I forget, that two coaches in two different teams all know each other very well.
No doubt. No, it's gonna be a fascinating weekend.
I found out on Facebook that Brandon Staley, if I pronounce the last name correctly.
Brandon Staley, correct. Yeah, he's the defensive coordinator.
And knows the Packers very well.
Mm-hmm.
So my other question is that, how can Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur and the rest of the Packers team can outsmart the Rams?
Well, I mean, again, it's just a matter that, obviously you're going to have Jalen Ramsey going against Devontae Adams and pretty much taking Adams out of the game. Then what you have is, can they get the ball to the receivers and the tight ends and all those different things? I mean, the key is going to be touchdowns, not field goals. Because if you don't get touchdowns, it's not going to work.
That is true.
Hey, thank you for the call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Oh, thank you.
A couple quick questions. John, with the new GM coming in for Denver, what do you think his number one priority is? Do you think it's going to be Justin Simmons, or do you think it's going to be trying to shore up the quarterback position?
I think the priority is going to be trying to make sure you do take care of Justin Simmons, help decide what the situation is with Von Miller because he's in that option year of the contract and the police are investigating him for whatever. We don't know what it is. So I'd say right now the priority is more on defense than it is anything else. And then bringing in a quarterback to compete, but not necessarily beat out. Cause I think, they owe it to John Elway and they owe it to Drew Lock to give him one more chance. because, you know, he didn't necessarily have the full complement of receivers that they had, which I thought that was one of the keys to the offseason. It's like, okay, they add two wide receivers to go to Courtland Sutton. Well, and then Courtland Sutton doesn't get a chance to play because he's on injured reserve. And then they weren't able to, you know, do much at the other spot. But I think they got to take care of Simmons because he plays so well. And, you know, bring in something a little bit better as a backup quarterback or something that can compete. But again, you know, what you saw this year, Josh Allen was in a little bit of a similar situation than Drew Lock. Now, again, we don't realize in 2 years, Lock has missed some games with injuries, and that's not good. But Josh Allen was sitting there averaging 19 points a game, and if they were going to look at it based on that, were they going to give him a contract extension? Well, this year he comes back, he gets that third receiver who comes to be one of the best in football in Stephon Diggs, and the next thing you know, they're scoring almost 30 points a game and a 10-point improvement. So they owe one more year to Lock, and then they got to start figuring it out. And by the way, George Patton is really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything I've read about him, even though there's not too much, it says he's a real good character and he's demands respect from the other players and stuff like that, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely think they need to give Lock another full go-around and, like you said, bring someone maybe to back him up, but not a specific challenge because I know no one had preseason or OTAs and all that stuff. But I think moving in with the new offensive coordinator from last year, he definitely needed the extra practice time, with, especially with those wide receivers. And then the Von Miller thing, he's from, you know, I don't know what he's being investigated about either. I know he has some trouble on Instagram from his ex-fiance or whatever about some text he was sending, but that's that. I don't think they're definitely not going to bring him back if he's able to play this year, next year, for the amount of money he's supposed to earn.
Yeah.
And then with him coming off for injury like that, I don't know. Do you think there would be a lot of other teams that are actually seeking his ability with coming from an injury like that?
Can't see why not. he's too good of a player.
Mm-hmm. You think he's going to be stubborn and not want to take a contract cut?
Probably. Although, you know, depends on how this thing goes, because, you know, I don't know what where it's going as far as the investigation, but, you know, if the investigation doesn't go well, then there might be, you know, a little bit of a turnaround as far as that goes. But, yeah, again,
okay.
Nobody knows right now because nobody knows the cap number for next year.
Yeah, and one last thing also, I heard with Gordon's DUI thing that since he broke a rule in the contract that Denver could possibly restructure his contract or let him go. And I know they want him back.
Yeah.
Because Philip Lindsay can't go by himself, but they're paying him too much money for those 2 years for the production. I mean, even Kamara was getting similar. I mean, he was getting paid more than Gordon, but Gordon wasn't that far away with his contract status.
Well, so Gordon got 2 years at $16 million, and
yeah.
Kamara ended up getting $15 million.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I don't think Gordon would have got that type of money for 2 years, even though he did pretty good.
Yeah.
But either way, John, hey, I want you to have a good weekend, bud, and take care of yourself.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Dave Grosby, our weekly dose of the Gros, be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Bert in Camino Island. Hey, Bert.
Hi, John. First time caller.
Good.
Yeah, I got a couple of subjects I wanted to talk about. The Seahawks seemed to me like they had one of the best special teams in the NFL.
Right.
The kicking game was incredible. I can't count the number of times they were pinned inside the 20 on a punt. But how did they rank in the NFL? And of the teams that are left in the playoffs, who had the best kicking team?
Well, I think New England. I know Rick Goslin for Sports Illustrated or for Maven, you know, does his annual review, and New England usually ends up with the number one. And of course, they had a punter that went to the Pro Bowl. They didn't do too bad on the kicking part of it. So New England was number one, but I would venture to say that Seattle had to be in the top six. Because, again, a kicker who didn't miss a field goal, a punter who arguably should have been going to the Pro Bowl, and, you know, Michael Dixon, you know, the good coverage units with the speed that they had and the young players. So I thought they did well. So in the end, you know, they probably had to be in the top six.
Uh-huh. And now the teams are left in the playoffs. Who's got the best team?
Best team? I still think it's – well, the best team could be New Orleans for talent – But I still think Kansas City is the team that's the team to beat because they've got Patrick Mahomes. It's wider open in the NFC.
John, which team has the best kicking game?
Oh, the best kicking game in the playoffs? Well, you know it's not the Rams because, you know, Matt Gase bailed them out. Probably Green Bay because, you know, Max Crosby is real good. just going up the top of my head right now, I'd say that, you can look positively at Baltimore. Baltimore would be, Baltimore might top out as the best because, Justin Tucker has been the best kicker of his era. Sam Koch is a good punter. They've got, good young players on the in coverage. So I'd give them. And then maybe Buffalo would be in the next group. Andre Roberts is a Pro Bowl return specialist. And I think they're okay at the kicking spot. So they would be in the mix too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
One other question on the, related to the Shaquille Griffith signing. I was wondering how much did a factor having Shaquem on the Seahawks team to re-signing Shaquille?
It's still going to be a matter.
Do like a package deal? Do they have the same agent? Could they do like a package deal where they get both brothers for the same number of years?
Well, obviously Shaquem's a backup and maybe the sixth linebacker on the team. I mean, he's not going to get big money. I mean, he's still on his rookie contract. So that's not a factor. But again, if you do let Shaquille Griffin go, he's still going to want to at some point reunite with his brother if that can work out. But that's why I think you want to reward the players that have been valuable to your team. And Shaquille Griffin has been very good from the very beginning when he started. He's been, after Richard Sherman left, their best cornerback. And so it's like, I still think you got to take care of him. Now, if the price becomes too unreasonable, then you can't. But you can also franchise him. And the franchise number will be discounted this year. So, he'll make good money. He likes this team. And, and obviously Shaquem would stay because there's no other place to go because he's under contract.
Okay. I would expect the Seahawks to treat them with the same respect they've treated to other players through the years.
And offseason, people were criticizing, even during the season, people were criticizing Jaron Reed getting an $11.5 million contract, which, that's a little bit of a discounted contract for a talented defensive tackle, particularly one who can rush the passer. And he got his two-year deal, and that was fair. And then people at the beginning of the season were saying, well, they made a mistake by doing that. Well, guess what? They took care of their own. He's a good leader on the team. And once they were able to get Carlos Dunlap on the outside at the Leo position, then they were able to set themselves up for the inside tackles to be able to get pass rush. Because remember, he had 10.5 sacks when he had Frank Clark on the outside. Then all of a sudden, he starts getting, 5 or 6 sacks now that he had somebody on the outside like Carlos Dunlap. And so, that worked out. And I think it's the same thing with Shaquille Griffin. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to James in Seattle. Hey, James.
How you doing, JC?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I wondered if you know the availability of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Is he going to be able to go for us tomorrow or not?
He didn't practice yesterday. He's listed as questionable. They didn't rule him out, but I'd have to think he's not going to be able to play. Maybe next week, not this week.
Now, I know this may sound funny, but I was kind of nervous about the Chiefs going up against the Brown because of Chubb and because of Kareem Hunt. What do you think they have to do to kind of eliminate the Browns' ability to kind of run the football? Is it jumping out to a big lead, or what do they need to do?
Well, a big lead would really help because then it takes them out of the run and puts it more into Baker Mayfield in the pass. I have to think you have 8 guys in the box. You realize that they're going to get some yards rushing, and you try to minimize their ability to get long drives and touchdown drives. Try to hold them to field goal drives if they possibly can do it.
Right, right. Okay, sounds good. One more question.
Yeah.
How come, what's going on with EB? How come Bieniemy doesn't seem like they said he's not interviewing well? What's the process with that? I think he would be an excellent coach.
I agree. I mean, he was the main guy that I thought would get a job, and now it looks like he's not going to get a job. I don't know if the The interviews don't work out. Certainly the one thing that doesn't help him is he's on the Kansas City Chiefs, and they may go to the Super Bowl, and you're not going to get him until February. That could be one of the issues there. But, I worry about this because, again, he should have a head coaching job. But then you've seen it for years, too. You know, teams that are now perennial Super Bowl teams have trouble sometimes, not being able to get their coaches to get jobs.
Yeah. Appreciate you, JC. Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Daryl in Tacoma. Hey, Daryl. Yes, Daryl. Daryl?
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I had to answer my radio.
Okay.
I have just two questions I'd like to ask. One is our new offensive coordinator. I'm not too familiar with him. I'd like to have your opinion.
They don't have
opinion.
One. There is no new offensive coordinator.
I thought they were talking to somebody.
They're talking to somebody, but they haven't hired anybody yet. I mean, they're talking to Doug Peterson. They're talking to Anthony Lynn. They're talking to the Chargers offensive coordinator. They're talking to all these other guys. So it's like, but they haven't hired anybody yet.
All right. Then let me rephrase that, man. Who do you think would be the best offensive coordinator to fit in with the way our offense is right now with offensive line and the running back and, of course, our quarterback?
Well, the best one without question is going to be Doug Peterson, from Ferndale. He ran a two tight end offense over in Philadelphia. He's a great play caller. He would be the best. And then, I would have to think that, you can look at some of the, Anthony Lynn would be okay, but I still think there's still a little bit of a better option. You look at the Chargers staff. I mean, you kind of get the feeling if they don't get Peterson or if Peterson doesn't want to coach, that ultimately what will happen is that they'll get somebody from the Chargers staff who's worked with Justin Herbert.
Okay. All right. And one more question, please.
Yeah.
This has to do with college football, the NFL.
Yeah.
Your opinion of Myers going to Jacksonville?
I'm not sold on it. Here's the reason, is that if you go back to 2000, only maybe about three or four of the pure college coaches that came into the league had winning records. And that included Jim Harbaugh, who obviously had been in the NFL for so many years. And that's not the case with Urban Meyer because, Harbaugh was a longtime quarterback in the league. I think he was a quarterback mm-hmm. coach at some point. So
right.
He knows the NFL. It includes Jim Harbaugh. That's Harbaugh there. And then that includes Chip Kelly, who would not call a success, even though he had a winning record in Philadelphia. So I think it's going to be tough because what happens, two things happen. If he gets too much power in personnel, he'll make mistakes. Like the first mistake he could make is that, he coached Justin Fields. If he takes Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence, disaster. Okay.
Ooh.
Secondly, he could be too hard on his players because one thing Urban Meyer does is demand everything on the practice field from his players. And that may, turn some heads. We saw that with Tom Coughlin. And so that may not work out. So in the end, I'm not sold that the Urban Meyer hire will be good. He's got to surround himself with, good NFL coaches to kind of pull him back a little bit. But I'm not sold on that one. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Coming up next, our daily dose of, or a weekly dose, our Saturday dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby coming up next.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
It's time for our Saturday Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, we got big football coming up, but I guess we've got to talk about the events of the week. I mean, first, the positive news is that John Snyder was able to get his contract signed through 2027 draft. How important was that?
I think it was hugely important. And look, I think John Schneider has been as good a GM as this organization has ever had. The proof is in the success that they've had over the past decade. To me, it's an example of of what I love most in sports. That's a team that's not getting tired of winning. And, you know, I'm not saying that there was much doubt, but, you know, you don't have Paul Allen as the owner anymore, so there may have been some question. There was also probably Detroit dangling an opportunity to do something that would seemingly be impossible. Let's make a winner out of the Lions. But in the end, the Seahawks got it done with John Schneider, and I think it's just a terrific move.
Of course, one guy that they lost was Scott Fitterer, who I think was a real good eye. But I guess the fortunate thing for John Schneider, he's got a really good deep staff.
And he is the one who brings that up more than anyone else. And it's the most underrated probably aspect of the Seahawks, of every team, is that staff that's underneath the general manager constantly looking for players. The success the Seahawks have had late in the draft, the success the Seahawks have had with undrafted free agents, and then, you know, the guys that are scouting the pros and bringing in guys who may not be doing so well in other places, and they tend to do well here. It's been a tremendous organization under John Schneider, and it's it's expected that you're going to lose some pieces of it, but they do retain quite a few of them, and the guy at the top, which is definitely the key, I think, for the Seahawks moving forward.
Yeah, no doubt. Then, of course, you have the situation with Brian Schottenheimer. Were you surprised that he lost his job?
I guess a little, John. They scored the most points they've ever scored. They seem to be okay offensively, even though, you know, Pete Carroll had a couple of telltale meetings with Brian Schottenheimer over the past two seasons, but you know, there was kind of a failure in approach, I thought, in the second half of the season. And, I'm not so sure it was Schottenheimer's approach that was the wrong approach. From Pete Carroll's perspective, though, it was. So it's what, going to be his fourth coordinator, that they come and go with Pete Carroll to a degree. So we'll see what the move they make. But I thought he did a good job. And, yeah, I would say I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah. But you can see there was a little bit of a philosophical difference for whatever it is that they ended up passing the ball more than they should, and that did not work out.
Well, I mean, what did not work out was changing in midstream. I mean, you know, they were doing that. They maybe overreacted a little bit to the Buffalo game, where Russell Wilson did not have a good game, and instead of trying to retool the passing aspect of what they were doing, turned their focus towards running the ball, and Russell got out of sync, and the offense was not the same offense at all it was in the first half of the season. Now, we are not giving enough credit, because a lot of this is about the playoff game, we're not giving enough credit to a Rams defense that is the best in the NFL, in my opinion, and also playing the best in the NFL, in my opinion. So, I mean, there may have been a little bit of an overreaction to that, but the offense had slowed down the second half of the season. But, look, you're paying Russell Wilson big money. He's in the prime of his career. You've got a couple of electric weapons on the end. So I hope they're not considering not throwing the ball down the field and completely going to the run game, and I'm sure they're not.
No, you have to have the balance, and I think that Russell's kind of a good buffer in the sense that, you know, he wants a little better. He got the tempo this year, but I think what ended up happening, they became victims of their own success because, you know, they had such success in the five non-division games, but the defenses they played weren't very good. And so, you know, Atlanta's defense was not good at that time. You know, Dallas's defense was terrible all season. Minnesota's defense was terrible. And, you know, Miami was okay. But, you look at those games and they probably kind of fooled themselves into thinking that everything was let Russ cook and it was cooking so well. But in the end, when they played better defenses in the second half of the season, let Russ cook got burnt.
Well, they stopped doing it at the same time. So, I mean, you know, two things happened. The Buffalo game, again, it was after that game that they dramatically started throwing it 25% less to their wideouts. And that was because of the turnovers they had in the Buffalo game. So they did two things. You know, they to my way of thinking, they may have stopped themselves a little bit, but that notwithstanding, there was clearly a disconnect to a degree between Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer. And we'll see if they bring in someone like Anthony Lynn, who's going to really, you know, continue to pound the ball, or an old veteran, or if Pete Carroll changes his spots a little bit and brings in someone young and new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, the young and new, I mean, I know that they were interested in the Clemson coach, but he's staying in college. And, you know, they got three coaches they're talking to down with the Chargers. And I don't know. What's your thought? Now, Anthony Lynn had 1 year, 2016, where he was the offensive coordinator on a pure running team. LeSean McCoy gained over 1,200 yards. doesn't have a lot of seasoning and play calling. Then you have Pep Hamilton, who's been around for a long period of time as a wide receiver coach, a quarterback coach. He was, you know, XFL coach calling plays. I tend to think I'd almost like Pep better than Anthony because, you know, quarterback coach, he's got experience in college, and I think that's so important now because you can bring some of the college things in that do work. I mean, that's what Andy Reid has done so successfully with some of the coaches he's got down in Kansas City. You know, I tend to think I would like Pep over Anthony.
I would agree with you, John, and I would just say as a final thought on it to remember that the offensive coordinator's most important player is Russell Wilson. So quarterback coaching experience, I think that's a plus. They all have had it before that. But Russell's the key guy to make this thing go one way or the other. So whoever you bring in, it better have a good relationship with number three.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And the guy that intrigues me more than anything is Doug Peterson from Ferndale. Because
oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, he would be fantastic, oh, I think, on every level.
Because I mean,
plus, he'd be... I didn't mean to interrupt you, John, but plus, you know, I mean, when Pete Carroll hangs it up, I mean, there you'd have a perfect guy to replace him as well.
Well, I mean, I think it's more of a one-year thing because you would imagine that if Doug Peterson comes here, he's going to do well. And if that's going to be the case, he'll be getting a head coaching job next year somewhere else. But in the meantime, he could possibly groom somebody that could be a candidate for the future. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I can't imagine if Doug Peterson does well, which I know he will, there's no way he's not going to be a head coach within the next 5 years.
No, you're definitely right about that. You're definitely right about that. But if they can get him, boy, that would be very, very exciting, I think.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. That's because, I mean, he's top-notch, and he's a good play caller and a good guy, and he is from Ferndale.
Yeah, check, 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 and check.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. So what's your thoughts on this weekend's game? What games seem to be the most intriguing to you?
John, I'm going off the deep end this weekend. I like every underdog this weekend.
Do you really?
Every single one of them.
And I'm on the complete other side. I go for the
Are you really?
Oh, yeah, I go for the
first. I like the Rams to mess up the Packers, and I think they've got a great chance of winning that game. I mean, I really, really do. I think that their defense is just flying high, and Jared Goff can make some mistakes, but I think they can shut down the Packers' offense. I think they can bother Aaron Rodgers like he hasn't been bothered. I like Jalen Ramsey in the matchup that he's going to have with Devontae Adams. So I like the Rams. The Bills are a slight favorite over the Ravens. I think the Ravens are going to win that game, although I think it's going to be the game of the weekend. I think even though the Tampa Bay Bucs were wiped out by New Orleans the two times they played, I think Tampa is in the groove right now. I think their defense is playing well. I think their offense has finally started clicking. And I think the Cleveland Browns have a tremendous chance against the Kansas City Chiefs, a tremendous chance. Baker Mayfield hasn't thrown an interception in 5 games. They've got their running game in place. They can run the ball against them. Kansas City hasn't played in a couple of weeks. They're going to be confident. It would be the upset of the century. But the Browns, have got momentum like it's coming out of their ears after that incredible performance against Pittsburgh. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we'll see. But like I said, I may have lost my mind, but I like every underdog.
Interesting. It is amazing when you think about it. If New Orleans wins and they're favored, that would be 3 times Tom Brady lost to one team in one season. Hard to imagine that.
It is extremely hard to imagine that, especially the way that they ended the season and the way they're playing right now. And I thought New Orleans looked a little, I'm not going to say tired, but didn't look as sharp in their first playoff game. They just didn't. And, you know, I like the teams that are playing well. And I thought the two teams that played the best last week were the Rams and the Browns. I mean, the Browns were unbelievable, but so were the Rams. I mean, again, I say that to Seahawks fans who I know are disappointed. I mean, that was a world-class defense having a world-class day. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you just run into that. And if you run into a great defense who's having a great day, I don't care who you have on offense, you're in trouble. And you know what, John? Another thing I thought I saw that was kind of interesting statistically speaking, you know the last time the number one defense played the number one offense in the playoffs?
When was that?
It was Tom Brady against the Atlanta Falcons.
Wow.
Patriots had the number one defense, Falcons had the number one offense.
Interesting.
At the end of the day, the number one defense pulled off the miracle of miracles. So we'll see. I mean, I've been wrong many times before, and I expect to be this time as well. But I'm looking forward. It's my way of saying also that I'm definitely looking forward to all four games.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's what's going to be the fun part of the whole thing, because it's a good weekend. We're in the divisional round. And the thing that I find amazing is that the AFC has four quarterbacks, all 25 or younger. Three of them from the 2018 draft, and Patrick Mahomes from 2017. And then you've got Drew Brees, who turned 42 yesterday. You have Tom Brady at 43. You have 37-year-old Aaron Rodgers. Jared Goff with the broken thumb at 26. But older quarterbacks in the NFC, younger quarterbacks in the AFC.
Yeah, that's kind of speaks to the AFC, I think, having better teams and being stronger this year, and that's going to continue for a while, because they've got a couple of other great quarterbacks who aren't in the postseason who are playing in the AFC. So it is interesting to see the old masters on the one hand and seeing the young bucks on the other hand. And I wanted to ask you a quick question, yeah. John. What did you think of Super Wild Card Weekend last week, and do you think we'll see that in the future?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, the idea of having three games a day is just phenomenal. I mean, you can't change that. I mean, I would not want four. That's too much.
Four would be too much.
Yeah, I don't want 16 teams. But having three games on a Saturday, three games on a Sunday, it just seemed to – it percolated. It really looked good.
I agree with you, and I expect we'll see it starting next year.
Okay, and so what else is on the Graz's agenda this weekend?
Staying socially distanced, practicing those good behaviors, watching football on television, and hoping everyone's all right and has a quiet, peaceful weekend this weekend.
That sounds good to me. And, of course, that is our Saturday Dose of the Graz with Dave Grosby. Dave, enjoy your weekend.
John, we'll talk next week, buddy.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And we're fortunate we have a little extra time to talk to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, what's up, John Clayton?
Did you didn't have any problem with the power, did you?
No. Power's good, and good thing that the power's good there at the station, because it's great to be back on the John Clayton Show, I'll tell you that, on 710 Cairo, home of the 2020 NFC West champ and team that left the wild card in their boot, the Seattle Seahawks. And let me give a shout-out to Matt, the MC Nelson, for getting me on the air so I can bring it to the show on one of the great days of the NFL season, divisional playoff weekend, the Final Four, to get to the Final Four. So John Clayton put me down for the pesky Rams, Omar's Ravens, the Ohio Players Browns, and JB and Renton's Saints. Now, John Clayton, you've heard me say many times, go Seahawks, Hawk and Roll, right?
Right.
But when I say go Seahawks, I don't mean go into the off season. I don't mean go to Mexico. Mm-hmm. I don't mean go out and get lit up by a third-string quarterback who can't even make a four-finger pour. And when I say hawk and roll, John Clayton, I don't mean run to the pawn shop and hawk the NFC West title and roll the dough into Southwest airline tickets to get away while the playoffs are still going. And, John Clayton, you know I love you. You know I respect you, and you know that I would never want to fight you. But if you say one more time the Seahawks were 12-4 and will compete for a Super Bowl next season, we're going to have to get in the octagon.
So what do you think? Are they going to be a six-win team or what?
What?
I mean, they're still good. I mean, I doubt that they're going to win 12 games.
I know, man. I'm busting your chops.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do anything for this season. Even coming out of the professor's mouth, it just does not fit well with a Seahawks fan like myself to hear that when this season's over. John Clayton, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
With the NFL COVID-19 opt-out for players at the start of the season, which teams do you think it had the greatest impact on?
Patriots. Because the Patriots had eight guys opting out, including Highsmith at linebacker. I mean, they lost a lot. And, you know, they lost guys in the secondary. I mean, that was one that's hard to recover from.
Mm. Let me ask you, Professor, what players do you see missing from the teams this weekend who could have, should have, would have been there?
Well, you mean as far as injuries and things of that nature? We still don't know about...
No, the guys, anybody that has opted out at the beginning of the season that they sitting at home wishing that they were on their or their teams were wishing that they were in the lineup this weekend?
Well, I mean, certainly Green Bay would have been better with Devin Funches at wide receiver. I mean, that was one. I mean, you know, for half a season, they didn't have Alshon Robinson, Alshon Williams with the defensive tackle for the Rams. They didn't have that. You know, you look at fortunately, Kansas City had a couple opt-outs, but they weren't real big. But that it's going to be interesting to see how these guys all come back.
What do you mean?
Well, because again, it's like, some may get cut. And where are they physically after missing an entire season?
4 days ago, it was January 12th, back in 75, was the first Steelers Super Bowl. Were you there?
75, yeah, I was there. Yeah.
That's the Vikings playing the Steelers, right?
Yeah, it was in Tulane Stadium. And I remember certainly, how fired up Chuck Knoll was before the game. Because normally, he's not, he's pretty laid back. He's pretty even keeled. But what he ended up doing is that, he felt so confident about that team before the game. He gave him a pep talk that they're sitting there going, what's this about? And then, of course, what I remember is that, here's Fran Tarkenton running around. And every other play, it seemed like L.C. Greenwood was batting the ball down. And I still remember Dan Jenkins of SI wrote this article, and it led off with Fran Tarkenton was so frustrated after the game, after losing, that he tried to spike the ball and throw it to the ground and was batted away by L.C. Greenwood.
Wow.
That's what I remember about that game.
That's good, man. Lastly, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of my favorite manager of my team, a Hall of Famer, a legend, and I don't think any of us would be surprised if the Orange County Coroner held a press conference at some point to say Tommy Lasorda really did have Dodger blue blood in his veins. God rest your soul, Skipper. Talk to you, John Clayton.
All right. Thank you, Commando, and thanks, everybody. We'll be back next Saturday from 8 until 11. Coming up next, it's Sports Saturday. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.